we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Welcome to America Out Loud Pulse. Wow, what a wonderful audience we have. We're so glad again to be here. You're glad to be here, aren't you, Ginger?
Oh, you bet I am. Oh,
that's Ginger Breggin. I'm Peter Breggin. I'm Peter R. Breggin, MD. I'm a psychiatrist. My wife has an identity which is far more expansive and interesting than that. Do you want to try to describe who you are? I'm going to put you on the spot.
No.
You don't?
No.
You refuse?
Yes.
Okay. Ginger Breggin is brilliant. Ginger Breggin comes up with insights that blow me away on a daily basis.
I think this is more embarrassing than if I did this myself.
Yeah. Well, if you want to do it yourself.
No, honey. Okay. You go ahead.
I'll go ahead. All right. Well, anyway, she's God's blessing in my life. That's what she is. And I think I'm...
Definitely my blessing. Yeah. You're my blessing.
Okay. Well, we get that all that straightened out. That's the introduction, folks. Now, you are on America Out Loud Pulse, and I want to tell you more about America Out Loud. You can get an app for it. It is a radio platform and a columns platform at the least. It's probably things I don't even understand. Every time I've tuned in on America Out Loud recently, and I've been doing it every day, I hear something new and interesting. The arrangement of people who are talking on America Out Loud on a regular basis and the people they're interviewing is quite startling. It's really, really good. And the Pulse is a special set of interview programs, which are every Monday, every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 5 days a week at 5 p.m. And on Wednesdays, which is one of my favorite shows, we have Peter McCullough, and he's actually sort of interviewed by Malcolm, who is the founder and owner of America Out Loud. I think it should be made into a part of everyone's regular listening. And then if you go and you look at the columns, so Ginger and I not only do this radio show once a week, Thursdays at 5, we also do a column. And sometimes I write it, sometimes she write it. We almost always read each other's work. They're joint work, but we let you know, and you can probably tell by the style, Ginger writes beautifully, you know, who's the actual author. I put in a lot more endnotes than she does. So that's the main difference. You can identify them that way. Now, we got really giddy with anxiety and fear and self-justifying feelings last night when Ginger came up with this remarkable article in Bioethics. The author, maybe I shouldn't mention his name because I'm not going to be really, really nice to him. His first name's Parker. I'll tell you who he is. It's Parker Crutchfield. He has a headline to this Bioethics original article, which is August 29th of 2018. We're going back a ways just before COVID-19, and what an intro this is. He is saying that some therapists argue that moral bioenhancement ought to be compulsory. So what is bioenhancement, moral bioenhancement? Well, it's a little on the bizarre side. One of the drugs that's being used is psilocybin because the mushrooms make people more caring. My knowledge base that goes back, 50 or 60 years was that it made people crazy. I think they're very confused about you know, what's what in the bioethics group. Now, interestingly enough, this person seems to have absolutely no knowledge of drugs, no experience with medications, no idea what the brain does when it gets a drug in it and how it reacts.
Either that or he has a little too much experience with...
We can't say that about a person.
Oh, that's Stretch only that. My opinion.
Well, we don't know. It's a bad opinion. There's no basis. It is erased. Parker is free of any such accusation on our part, but certainly a lot of the people that you that advocate for these drugs use them. That's, I mean, generally a good argument, and it may make one or another person feel that they're better than they are. I don't know. Have you ever sat around, Ginger, in the old days, and you're smoking dope? Or you weren't smoking dope? I've sat around a number of times in the old days. By that, I mean the 60s.
Actually, honey, I was very young in the old days.
Were you born yet?
When? Yes, I was born.
When? Born. I forget what year you were
born. I was born in 1951.
Okay.
That makes me 71 now. And I could have, if I was precocious in Indiana, been involved in the old days. But no, I was in Indiana. So when I was growing up and I was a teenager in the 60s, it was like growing up in the 50s. It was actually very safe compared to other parts of the country at that point.
Well, this for me would have been in the late 60s after I'd finished my training. People were smoking dope at all the parties. And I remember deciding, you know, I'm not going to smoke. I'm just going to watch everybody. And somebody would say something so deep, and people would go, oh, man. And they'd say something else.
It sounds like a bad Cheech and Chong movie, Peter.
Well, it is kind of like that. And I mean, that's what it is. It's a bad Cheech and Chong movie. Somebody else would make a joke, and people would get hysterical, and it was a very stupid joke. And I realized that the profundity in smoking dope was how stupid it made you. So much for trusting anybody who uses a drug to evaluate its effects. So I want to go back, though, to our friend Parker Crutchfield. And I hope he listens
He's
to
not
this.
Our friend, honey. Oh. We don't know him.
Oh, yeah?
No. No.
You didn't prompt me and prep me enough here. No, it was just a manner of speaking. So going back, and neither Ginger nor I have had enough sleep, as you can tell. Last night. So he says again, some therapists argue that moral bioenhancement ought to be compulsory. I take this argument one step further, arguing that if moral bioenhancement ought to be compulsory, then its administration ought to be covert rather than overt. That is to say, that it is morally preferable for compulsory moral bioenhancement to be administrated without the recipient knowing they are receiving the enhancement. Wow. Now, this is an ethicist. Oh, this is what he says. One of his justifications is, in particular, a covert compulsory program promotes values such as liberty.
Which is bizarre.
Yeah, gee, Parker, I hope somebody hasn't put your name on something you didn't write. And it's very confusing. I've read some of his other stuff, and I won't get into it. It's confusing. So what I want to get at here is that ethicists are not. That's it.
Well, actually, ethicists are there to excuse whatever somebody wants to do, including every crazy thing you can think of, like taking the most dangerous pathogens on the planet and tinkering with them in order to make them more dangerous, perhaps infectious to human beings when they have not been infectious before, or make them dangerous when they haven't been before. There's a whole question about whether we should even have things like level 4 labs that are doing experiments to actually do enhancing of the various pathogens that exist in this world. That's excused in some ways in warfare terms of preparing ourselves for somebody else doing that who's our enemy and then using it against us. So we need to be prepared by knowing about these things and studying them ourselves. But and then, of course, there's the classic excuse. Well, what if the diseases, the great flu from 1918 comes back? And what always gets omitted in that question, because that's used as a great excuse for why we have to do other experiments now to prepare against the next great flu. And of course, what always is omitted from that is the fact that most of the deaths from the 1918 great flu were not from the virus, the flu virus. They were from the pneumonia that followed. And we now have antibiotics where we did not have antibiotics in 1918. And if the 1918 population had antibiotics to address the disease, and they had treated the great flu early when people started to get it, they would not have had the deaths they had. So, of course, in our brilliance, as soon as we got COVID and people started to get sick, the powers that be tended to recommend against any treatments that might mitigate or address the symptoms that were coming up, including antibiotics, which is why we had so many deaths in part when the COVID pandemic began.
Also did not have steroids. And two of the most basic treatments then are antibiotics. And when you get into
you're talking
inflammation.
About 1918.
Yeah.
Right.
We didn't have steroids to suppress inflammation. We didn't have antibiotics to suppress or kill pneumonia. Bugs?
I don't think you had cough suppressant. And you certainly didn't have asthma treatments the way you have now.
No.
Respiratory treatments.
That's right. So it's very clever. This is really important, folks. And Ginger was the one that drew this to my attention, just as she's bringing it up now, that this constant threat of we'll have another, you know, pandemic like the 1918 flu. Well, if we had that flu now, we'd be able to take care of it easily, unless the government intervened, as they have done, to prevent us from giving people with the flu antibiotics at the proper stage of their illness and steroids at the proper stage of their illness, and told them, as we literally, our doctors are still telling patients, no, I can't treat COVID, stay home. It's just amazing. And go to the hospital when you're blue, you know.
It's a moral failing, a complete moral failing. And it's another failing on the part of ethicists that they haven't called this. By the way, I need to interrupt. We're almost done with this segment, but we have to credit the source where we learned about this bioethics article. And that source is Igor Chudov. Chudov. And he does a Substack, which just came out in the last day or so, which blew my mind last night and blew our minds together. It's titled, Should Individualism Be Medicated Away to Be Replaced by Welfareism? Welfareism being a concept, I guess, of taking care of the community by changing individuals so that they're very compliant and cooperative with the rest of the community, no matter what they would normally feel. And it's a kind of collectivism. This writer is brilliant, and he does a brilliant job of putting together the failings of ethicists and the dangers that abound that ethicists seem to be created in order to excuse as they have with weapons of mass destruction and level four labs and the gain of function work that gets done. Ethicists seem to be on the side of the mad scientists every time.
It's really quite astonishing. My earliest experience with ethicists, and then we could probably move away from that particular topic, was in the early 1970s when I was criticizing the psychosurgeons. These psychiatrists would work with neurosurgeons to pick the patients, and then the neurosurgeons would stick electrodes in their heads and stimulate their brains and burn holes in their heads, and sometimes without the patients knowing it, and without any kind of a genuine informed consent. You could tell that from reading the articles. It was such an abomination. And one of the ways they tried to mute my criticism was by getting ethicists almost always, well, they're always either from a university or a think tank, to get ethicists to come in and to sort of go, well, there's a little of this and there's a little of that, and we got to think about this and that. The progressive relativists, now they'd be globalists. And that's how they are used in this environment of the universities and the medical centers. They're more justifiers than they are people who would actually interfere with something that was being promoted by a physician or a surgeon or anybody in the institution. And there was even an ethicist who sort of followed me around, taking stuff from my writings and presenting it as his own at committee, when they would have a committee meeting or a committee talking in front of a group of people, a panel, and they wouldn't acknowledge that the only reason they were doing this because I was stirring up so much trouble for them. Instead, they'd have an ethicist who'd refer to things he'd learned from reading my work, and he'd give that hemming and hawing and staying in the middle and not threatening anybody and putting everybody to sleep. We are coming to the end of the first segment. It was a wake up for me.
We'll be right back.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Cold and flu season is here. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to minimize airborne viral threats? Well, now there is, and it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray called Cofix RX. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered. To reduce your chance of getting hurt, you wear a safety belt when you're driving. To limit sun damage, you wear sunscreen on the beach. Cofix RX is just like that. It's an additional layer of protection. It's sold by thousands of pharmacists and medical doctors nationwide. It's made right here in the USA. Again, it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray. You've heard them talk about it here on the Out Loud Network over and over again. Check out CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com for a retailer near you, or use coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off at CofixRx.com.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. We are the voice of a nation, the American nation, that is. This is Malcolm Out Loud. I invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com, where the fight for liberty and justice continues. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, wonderful folks. Thank you for being here. Thank you for taking this presentation more seriously than we presented it. because it's really serious stuff. We still get used to being together like this. It's kind of fun, and it's oh dear. Sorry. I find it kind of fun.
I find it kind of nerve-wracking.
Okay, well, it's all that is, as our boss Malcolm, who runs this station, would say, man, that's great. That's great stuff. That's great stuff. What does he say?
I wish I had a hot mic right now.
Oh, yes. When he heard us talking on the phone with him one day.
That's the kind of stuff I want to hear. Yeah. Where's my hot mic?
Yeah, so that encouraged Ginger to think her natural self was worth a hot mic. And so there's been a noticeable peaking today of our being more relaxed and more kidding around and more serious at the same time. This stuff is deadly. There's a couple of things I just was talking about a couple of days ago on Monday on Tamara Scott's show. I go on there twice a month. It's at 1 o'clock and it's on the Lindell TV, the Pillow Man and the Slippers Man and the Sheets Man and all that. Mike Lindell, a tremendous supporter of freedom.
A great patriot.
Great patriot. And I go on her show every first and third Monday of the month. And I'm on for the whole show. And we talked about a couple of things that relate to the oppression and control of doctors. And, you know, it fits with the mood of this article we're reading about, you know, forcing people to do things against their will. It's astonishing how that can be discussed in a bioethics you know, journal. It seems to be a sort of a journal. It's Wiley Online. Wiley is very respectable without, you know, really in the abstract, just raising terrible issues, you know, that come up. I mean, where are we going if we can just control people that way? Well, there were a couple of things that came up on that show that I brought up. And one of them is what's happening to one of our friends, a great colleague, a physician, Meryl Nass, NASS. And she's up in Maine, and she's being persecuted by the local medical ethics, not ethics group, but they try to be the medical ethics group. It's just a medical board that oversees medicine, and they're giving her a tough time. And a lot of great physicians from the health freedom movement are there to testify on her behalf and to support her. And we want to send her our blessings. It looks like they're beginning to pull back on some of the charges, at least. That's the last place we were with any information we could get for the show today. And at the same time, on September 30th, not that long ago, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, signed legislation. It's called AB 2098 to actually reinforce the rights of that medical committee, the Medical Board of California, to specifically punish doctors who talk to their patients and give them disinformation and misinformation.
Actually, I've just had an epiphany on why they need to do this. They need to do this, of course, to force the vaccines upon the population. In order to force the vaccines upon the population, they need to have a compliant medical team or medical field. So doctors and other providers of healthcare have to toe the line and become compliant rather than speaking what they believe is what a physician may believe is in the best interests of the patient. And it ties right in with this article that we're looking at, because if you've got ethicists and the World Economic Forum looking at providing morality pills to a population, in order to make them compliant. If you've got morality pills there that they want to give to the population, you need people to administer them, because frankly, they probably won't be pills, since people might object to taking a pill when they don't know what's in it or when they suspect it. So you're going to need a very compliant healthcare field in order to go in and do the bully work of administering the shots or whatever other kind of treatment, putting the patches on the people or whatever other kind of treatment needs to be done. So there's always, I think, more than one reason why these oppressive and totalitarian kinds of actions are being done at this point. There's, in addition to the immediate goal that we may see as a population, there's this whole string of, oh, well, once we get the doctors in line, we can have them deliver all the morality pills. And oh my gosh, it's the 2030 plan. It's you will own nothing and you will be happy. Well, this is how you're going to be happy. You're going to be being given chemical substances that'll make you, quote, happy, unquote.
I think it's a really good analysis. I think you sharpen my own thinking about it when you point out that the reason you got to focus on the vaccines is because it just gives the doctor no option but to push the vaccines, and they're going to be just continuing to push one of these vaccines after another. Because actually, the law already covers giving disinformation and things like that, earlier laws. I mean, the medical societies have the power to censor doctors for what they say on the air and so on. It's not the medical society, but the board. Sometimes it's the medical society. This is about the actual state board, not the independent medical society, which is often a part of the AMA. Not always, I guess, but often a part of the AMA. And it fits with something else that I brought up with Tamara, who's just a wonderful person to meet with on a regular basis, like I'm doing. And that is in Ontario, the medical society. Now we're talking about the medical society, the doctors group, not the board that's part of the government, but the medical society issued a guidance in which they, among other things, suggested that people who are averse to vaccines should be treated as if they are mentally ill and be given drugs or sent to a therapist. And this has now been taken down. So the criticism that arose in Canada, I wish we'd get that strength of criticism here in the U.S. that just turned them around, and they took that piece out. But it was very interesting. They are still pushing that doctors can't treat patients with any of the really effective treatments. They had a little conversation, mock conversation with the doctor, and the doctor asks, can I give those drugs that are said to be helpful for COVID-19 as prophylactics to my patients? And then the answer is immediately no. It's like, that's it, no. And then it says, oh, they're not useful, they're harmful, and besides, they're used for other things in medicine. If we start using them for COVID, they won't have enough for medicine.
Oh, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, these are the cheapest and easiest things in the world to produce, and one of the safest drugs. So we just we're talking today about the whole issues of control and manipulation that is going on now in the world, and everybody gets in on it.
It's clearer to me than ever before, looking at this article and thinking about this, that really medicine is going to be, the attempt is to completely weaponize medicine against the populations, all of them, the military, the police, the civilian population, weaponize medicine in order to control the various aspects of the entire population and create a completely collective and compliant culture.
You know, we've been trying to help. It's very hard to find lawyers and other people to help people. I've been trying to help a school teacher who, under New York State law, when she refused to accept the narrative, I think she wouldn't wear a mask in school and some other things. She wouldn't take the narrative. They sent her to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist judged her to have to be psychotic, to have psychotic delusions. And her example was that the psychiatrist's example was that she believed there was evil in the universe that was pushing these things, and she did not ethically want to participate in this. And I agree with her, and so do most of the people we work with in the health freedom movement. They believe that many of them are Christians, and some of them are Jews, and like myself, or Christians like Ginger, and many of them believe that there is that this is evil, that what we're dealing with is evil. I tend to think that a bit, but I'm more interested in showing that these are actually secular empires that have a very long history of empires going back to before the birth of Christ, 2050 BC. They had a violently totalitarian empire in China. So this idea of having these empires that are constantly trying to push on us. And we should mention the book. You know, we just don't push our book anywhere near enough. Ginger and I are the author of COVID-19 and the Global Predators. COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. If you're in the U.S., you can get We Are the Prey at a discount on a dedicated site just for the book.
You can get the book at wearethepray.com. And that's our only book on that website because it's delivered through a fulfillment center. You can also obtain our COVID-19 and the Global Predators from Amazon or any other online or actual physical bookstore. If the bookstore doesn't carry the book inside on its shelves, they can special order it for you. And it's available both in paperback, also as an Audible now, so you can listen to it. And we had an excellent actor who did the reading. And it's also available for Kindle at a specially marked down price.
$2.99 still?
Yeah.
We wanted to make sure that anybody...
We're giving it away.
Yeah, we're probably losing a little money there. We're giving it, we're giving it away there. You know, that our book provides that the basis. It's not just about COVID-19. It's the global predators. It's still the deepest dive there is. Bobby Kennedy himself, while putting his book out, it's a wonderful, very, very good book about Fauci, he endorsed our book as the deepest dive into the criminal conspiracy behind COVID-19. So we don't want you to forget about that. Everything you see happening in the world today that seems bizarre, stupid, irrational is actually the schemes of the global predators. I divide them up now into the Eastern and the Western Empire. The Eastern Empire is Xi Jinping, the boss, the gang mafia boss of the Communist Party in China, violent man, praises Mao and praises the original most vicious empire builders from a couple thousand or more years ago in China. And that's his model, is to be as tough as possible. And he's continuing to toughen up the approach they take to their people and to the rest of the world in China. And that's the Eastern Empire. And it totally collaborates with the Western Empire, which is Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab and all the bankers and all the tech companies and all the universities. And
I'd like to interrupt. We only have 3 minutes, and I'd like for you to remind us all why this kind of top-down totalitarian issue is, or government, or governmental control operation, why that's a problem. I mean, maybe we just need somebody up there bossing us all around and telling us how to be good citizens. Why is this a problem?
Well, what we have all learned who have been thinking about it, about what makes for a good world, a good life on both an individual and a political level, is to give people the maximum amount of freedom possible. And that is made clearly as a natural right of people in the Declaration of Independence, from nature's God and from God. And whether you have a strong belief in God or not, what it does when it brings it from God and from the Judeo-Christian tradition is that no man may tinker with it, that this is immutable, and that that's the basis of government. And what we find when you have constitutional democracies, sometimes people speak of them as republics, but there has to be a constitutional republic where there's a Bill of Rights and there's freedom. What you find is that you have enormously rapid growth economically. You find that the society in general flourishes. You find that the nation that becomes a democracy joins a club of democracies who never attack each other, almost never. And they never kill each other, kill their own people, as all the totalitarian countries do. They've killed hundreds of millions of people, the communists alone, over the years. You build the possibility of people taking responsibility in order to get together and be creative and be loving and stand up for each other in a way that no other form of government does. So that's a basic lesson. And the problem for the globalists is that no patriotic nation will put up with the globalist pigs. Why do you want pigs charging through your home and charging through your fields and groveling and up, grabbing up your wealth and your freedom? That's who they are. I like that vivid picture. We'll be back after a short break.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD.
Well, Ginger Breggin has been unleashed. I turned to her and I said, let's talk about some positive stuff. And she looked at me and went, yuck, during the break. So what's going on? Why can't we talk about and bring hope? We all need hope all the time. Oh, you really mean that?
I really mean that. I think that we need to open our eyes again and again. There's layer upon layer of plotting being done against all of us. And I feel like there just aren't enough hours in the day to dig through it enough.
Well, I think it's really, really important that, heck, even if we're going down into Titanic for the band to play the music on and for the loving couples to hold each other and for people to pray and for the struggling people in the lifeboats who have a chance of survival to take the very best care of each other.
Well, I agree with that, but I've actually been puzzling the last few days about how all of us who care about freedom and care about free governments and governments that represent their constituency and that aren't massively oppressive, how do you start to unwind what has happened? And that has been occupying a lot of my thought. I feel like there's unwinding that needs to be done at every level, in addition to going to the polls and voting, which can have mixed results. There are actions that each of us should be able to do locally and then regionally. What do you have to say about that?
Well, there's many, many approaches, and each of us are different. I think that one of the most important missing elements, and this is something Ginger and I have been concerned about, one of the most important missing elements is that the conservative, freedom-loving, libertarian type of people have been so frightened by the January 6th abuses that are going on that people are terrified to meet in a group for fear they'll be called terrorists and put on a watch list or locked up or something like that. Now, that is just what the Biden administration and the FBI and the Justice Department want.
And Nancy Pelosi.
And Nancy Pelosi, who, thank God, is going to be leaving. But that isn't going to change a lot. I mean, it will not change as much as we hope.
We have to change our own training that we have unwillingly and unwittingly been involved in. I find that when I'm writing a social media post or something, that I may want to say, we need to fight for this or that. And I censor myself and I change the word fight because maybe that's going to sound violent or something. And I think that all of us have got this sort of ingrained muzzling of ourselves that has happened based on what we witnessed others go through who have been censored and what we ourselves have experienced in censorship. And there needs to be a kind of a willingness to again push back those boundaries that have been imbued upon us so that we don't even think about it. We keep altering our language. We don't speak freely the way we want to.
That's really, really true. And one of the things I know from studying the human mind all these years is that when you limit what you speak, you begin to limit what you think and feel.
And what you can imagine.
Oh, God, and what you can imagine. Absolutely. That's such an important addition. And we can't continue to allow this to happen. We're not going to be leaders of this. We're just making a suggestion that spontaneously people around the country start having peaceful assemblies. Call them so the people know you're talking about the First Amendment, which gives us the right to peaceful assembly. So call them peaceful assemblies and meet in your hometowns. I mean, do big ones if you want in New York or DC. But we have to get out there and show we are not afraid. They can't lock up every the last one of those. They can't break into every one of our houses and take us away. They just can't do it. And at some point, if they keep doing that, they know that there'll be a revolt. And they're not, we've got to get out there and push them peacefully. And I'm not even thinking about the aggressive peacefulness of a Gandhi who just would sit on the roads and get in the face of people and who would have the civilians, you know, this image from the movie, you know, and the movie's pretty accurate, you know, of people walking up to the salt mine, which they are trying to make into a people's salt mine, basically, and just walking up and getting clubbed down to the ground, walking up, getting clubbed down to the ground. I'm not even advocating what Gandhi did. Let's begin with just going out and peacefully meeting, for goodness sakes, especially before it gets too bitter cold in the winter to do it up north.
I remember when the lockdowns first got lifted, when we first had lockdowns in New York, we weren't allowed to leave our homes. And we had to order our groceries in. They'd arrive at the front door. We'd wait until the delivery people left. And then we'd collect our groceries. A lot of us emptied them outside, left the bags there.
Oh, God.
I mean, it was like how I dealt with mail after the anthrax threat down in Bethesda, where I'd open the mail on the stoop so my family wouldn't be exposed to something if I got sick and exposed to a powder.
That was a real threat. They were sending anthrax around.
And it was in D.C. So our mail was going through those systems. But, now I lost my train of thought.
Well, we're talking about how rigid we got. We got.
Right after the lockdown, when we first were told that we could go out again, and I thought, this is ridiculous. Nobody picks my vegetables like I do. I keep getting these brown-edged lettuce and stuff from the delivery people. And I decided I was actually going to venture out to the grocery store. I didn't wear a mask in my car. But as soon as I got in my car, which needed to be jumped because it had been in the garage for 2 months, when I got into my car and got it going and pulled out into the driveway and onto the main street, I started shaking. It was completely unexpected. I already knew that this was not the big deal that it had been made out to be. I knew all of this intellectually, but I had been trained in that amount of time, and I had apparently absorbed enough of the fear that was being promoted mercilessly over all of the communication, the TV, the radio, the social media, that I had apparently absorbed enough of that it was in my, it was just ingrained in me. And I was shaking, I was breathing fast, I sweated, and I made myself go to the grocery store. And I prayed and I got my groceries and I came home. And the next time I went out, I had a little bit of residual and then it passed. So there's a matter of being aware of these things that have been imbued inside of us and that the barriers that have been put up inside of us through behavior modification and starting to feel that barrier pushed enough so you feel the barrier. And then move beyond the barrier and get used to it again. Get used to freedom. We all have to start getting used to freedom again.
Well, in addition to the freedom and the and this is the concept of having peaceful assemblies. I just love that concept. And I'm using a uniform name. I'm just hoping they're going to start springing up. The peaceful assemblies we have put up on our website. Flyers, and we've got the first one out, and they're perfect for distributing at an assembly of people or sticking under your the windshield wipers of a car, or whatever looks reasonable and not offensive, putting it up on a bulletin board. And
pass them out at church.
Oh, yeah. Pass them out at church. Pass them out at the ball game. And the first flyer, it's one page. You have no idea how much work I put in to getting our ideas down on one page, rereading it, editing it, and finding typos after we put it up. We put a lot of energy into it, and it's about globalism. So it gives anybody who can read a very simple, quick introduction to globalism. And it's co-sponsored by Peter and Ginger and our website, and also by Malcolm.
By America Out Loud.
Malcolm's America Out Loud, this great group. If you want to learn more about us and follow us, we are doing a lot of different ways of communicating. And I do a live TV show once a week that also goes out as a radio show on PRN.live. Go to the website, go to Bregan.com and get the frequent flyer. We will not take your name and address. You don't have to give us your cell phone or your
you're talking
to get going to the flyers right now to get the flyers. But when you get there and get the flyers, just look over our website, use the drop down menu and see all the different media things that are available. It's a completely redone website. If you were on the website a few months ago, it's a whole new website now. So we have 5 minutes left.
All right. I'm going to say, I'm going to share a couple of more ways that you can keep track of our work. I know it's been spotty. We have our Bregan Alerts, which used to be called that used to be called Free Frequent Alerts, and they're now called Bregan Alerts. We have over 46,000 people signed up for our Bregan Alerts.
And a great rate of clicking on it.
Yes, we do.
I mean, way beyond the normal in the field.
Yes, and you can go to our website and sign up for those for free. And then there's also a Substack, which we have now started, which carries our columns. And
I forget about the Substack. We're doing so much.
Right. The Substack.
So far, you've been the one writing on it, but there's other stuff.
Well, no, I've been putting your work up too. Mm-hmm. I've been taking work from America Out Loud, where we've published things on America Out Loud, and I've been putting it up on the Substack. I've also occasionally reposted someone else's Substack that I feel is particularly critical. So it's, in a way, some of it is curated essays from other great thinkers. In addition to that,
we're great thinkers?
Other people are great thinkers.
Other great thinkers, all right. I like that. I think we're great. I actually do think we're great.
Honey, I think you're a great thinker.
I think you're a great thinker too. But it suddenly struck me that maybe not everybody out there would think we're great thinkers.
So also, America Out Loud, we have two forms of communication. One is this weekly radio show on The Pulse on Thursdays, and that goes to podcast. And then there's also our columns and all of the America Out Loud work, the columns that are published and the radio shows. They're wonderful. I think those are the major things, as well as our website, which we continue to add content to. So what are we going to talk about for 3 minutes?
Don't worry about it. It sets the audience off if you keep bringing up how many minutes we have left and whether we have anything to say. I get unnerves people a little bit. Is this the first time we've gone on by ourselves without a guest to smooth the way and take up space?
Does it get better?
I don't know. I mean, it's up to you.
No, I've still been nervous. Maybe it's like going out after lockup. Maybe it'll get better.
But one of the ideas that you have been promoting that we have gotten from our wonderful American friend who lives in Belgium, you'll get it in a minute if I don't. But the whole idea about money and cash and the importance.
Oh, you're talking about Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, yes. She's a financial expert, and she's been high up in the U.S. government. Finally had to leave when she discovered there were billions of dollars missing from HUD, which people are still looking for, all this money that's missing. God bless Catherine, a dear human being. She has a quarterly called Soteria is not the right, that's the psychiatric term.
Yes, that is. It's the Solari Report.
Solari Report. And she's just...
It's a quarterly report. It comes out in a beautiful magazine format. And she has her Solari Report online, and she's a wealth of information in there.
Well, she's been encouraging us, and Ginger's been working with her on this, to promote cash. I mean, they're going to come at us to try to destroy cash.
Who's they?
The governments of the world.
Yes, they already are proposing
to do that.
They're
working on it, and the banks of the world, the World Bank wants to set up its own digital cash kind of thing, so they'll have won't have any cash at all. They'll just be controlling anybody who buys it or uses it. They can wipe it out. They can double it. They can do anything they want with
it. So the way to fight this, and it's kind of an 11th hour fight, it's really important, is to use folding money or coins. Use cash every time you can. And go to community banks. Don't support the big banks. The big banks are the ones that are really in cahoots with the World Economic Forum and the other forces that are promoting digital currency. Once digital currency is in place and you don't have alternatives,
you're a slave.
You are a slave, because whoever runs the software for the digital currency and whoever controls that is the master. And believe me, China's already implementing this, and they're making it very clear that they're masters over their citizenship. And we don't want that here.
We're done. A very exciting session for me. I mean, I just love interacting with you and with our wonderful audience.
Thanks, honey.
Despite us, thank you for taking seriously these very serious things we're talking about. Bye-bye from Peter and Ginger Reagan.